We'll read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 30. We'll discuss three verses. They're all connected, theme-wise. So text 4, 5, and 6. The title of the chapter is Description of Adverse Fruitive Activities, Chapter 30. And chapter 9 is the second of two chapters in a row about devotional service. Very nice chapter, chapter 29. And after describing what devotional service is, the converse, what devotional service isn't, or the influence of identification, the soul's identification with matter interferes with devotional service. And another very prominent message is the influence of time, because devotional service, the message is that devotional service is eternally with the living entity, but in the deluded state, the living entity forgets the eternal service and becomes attached to products of matter that are influenced by time. It's just an interesting combination. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, the five main topics, those the living entity and the Supreme, and then there's the others. Matter, time, and fruitive activities. So fruitive activities become possible by the influence of time. You can't have fruitive activities without time. And then time also moves matter to bring about creation and bring about annihilation and the arrangements for fruitive activities. So, devotional service is timeless. It's the eternally with the soul and of the eternal nature of the soul. That's the position of devotional service. And then, the forgetful position of the soul is engaging in fruitive activities assisted by the agency of time. Again, you can't have fruitive activities without time. That's where the chapter ends. Here's the last verse. The eternal time factor has no beginning and no end. It is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the maker of the criminal world. It brings about that eternal time, brings about the end of the phenomenal world. It carries on the work of creation by bringing one individual into existence from another, and likewise it dissolves the universe by destroying even the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. That's how the chapter ends. So before, very quickly, moving into adverse fruit of activities, the theme of time continues with a metaphor, since the first verse of the chapter is a metaphor of clouds that are moved by the wind. And the clouds are not aware of the fact that they're being moved by the wind, but they're being moved by the wind. So similarly, a person in material consciousness isn't aware that all of his activities are being moved here and there by the time factor, but in fact, he's being carried by that time factor. We can't do anything without time to do it. And then just the two previous verses to the ones that we're going to discuss. Again, time is a theme or a refrain. Whatever is produced by materialists with great pain and labor for so-called happiness the Supreme Personality as the time factor destroys. And for this reason, the conditioned soul laments. The misguided materialist, text 3, does not know that his very body is impermanent and that the attractions of home, land, and wealth, which are in relationship to that body, are also temporary. Out of ignorance only, he thinks that everything is permanent. So the deluding potency has, you can say, a companion, and that's the time energy. So time energy brings things into a manifest state. People become attached to them. The time energy withdraws them. People lament. While they have the temporary thing, they act as if it's permanent, even though they know better, because of the deluding potency of Maya. So their companion is Maya, the Lord's deluding potency and the time energy. That's kind of leading into this whole topic. You know, what if you don't take up devotional service? Are there consequences? Yeah, the position is one becomes covered with forgetfulness of that eternal relation with the Supreme Lord and eternal time. And there's a whole other sense of reality. Illusion. And the theme of these three verses is people buy into the illusion. It's already stated, although impermanent, they think it's permanent. Although it's not theirs, they think it's theirs. And then the attachments to wealth, home, family, etc. becomes very, very powerful. The deluding potency is very powerful. So here's the three texts and their purports, starting with text 4. The living entity, in whatever species of life he appears, finds a particular type of satisfaction in that species, and he is never averse to being situated in such a condition. So, guess what Prabhupada is going to speak about? The life of a hog. And the next purport, the life of a hog. And Indra becomes a hog and he becomes attached to being a hog. Purport for text 4. The satisfaction of the living entity in a particular type of body, even if it is most abominable, is called illusion. A man in a higher position may feel dissatisfaction with the standard of life of a lower grade man, but the lower grade man is satisfied in that position because of the spell of Maya, the external energy. Maya has two phases of activities. He doesn't go into this too much, but it's mentioned many times in the Bhagavatam, these two terms. One is called Prakshepatnika, and the other is called Avaranatmika. Avaranatmika means covering, and Prakshepatnika means pulling down, quote unquote, pulling down. In any condition of life, the materialistic person or animal will be satisfied because his knowledge is covered by the influence of Maya. That's the Avaranatmika. Because his knowledge is covered, he's satisfied. And going back, the beginning part of the verse and purport, being satisfied in whatever embodied condition one gets, like the hog being happy with stool. Someone else, it's abominable, and to the hog, it's just fine. That's this Avaranatmika aspect of Maya. Because his knowledge is covered by the influence of Maya. In the lower grade or lower species of life, the development of consciousness is so poor that one cannot understand whether he is happy or distressed. This is called avaranatmika. Again, it's the same potency. Avaranatmika. Even a hog lives by eating stool, finds himself happy. Although a person in the higher mode of life sees that the hog is eating stool, how abominable that life is. This comment. I think it's a deep subject matter, these two potencies. Theoretically, knowledge is the antidote to the avaranatmika. Accepting something that's temporary to be eternal, the antidote is knowledge is not eternal, it's temporary. And with that knowledge that is temporary, detachment from being invested in it and looking for happiness and so on. Knowledge is an antidote for that one, avaranatmika. But knowledge isn't enough because there's another potency. That's that throwing potency, prakshepatmika, or pulling down. And bhakti is the only one that can address that one. That is, aversion to the personality of Godhead has its consequence, the being covered. So aversion to the personality of Godhead results in one being thrown out of the spiritual world, or thrown out of the internal potency, and then covered by the deluding potency. That's the problem. Our aversion in our relationship with Krishna, being averse to Krishna, which results in being averse to our position of happiness. So then we take some other kind of activity as happiness. That's that other potency of Maya. That's why there's unsteadiness in bhakti. It's because bhakti isn't matured yet. And so we're going forward in devotional service in an unsteady position due to the influence of that deluding potency. We get distracted and become involved in the temporary energy and the happiness or distress that comes from that. That's the covering potency. And again, the antidote is bhakti, because that deals with this throwing potency or pulling down potency feature of Maya. Okay, text 5. Same theme. The conditioned living entity is satisfied in his own particular species of life, semicolon. While deluded by the covering influence of the illusory energy, he feels little inclined to cast off his body even when in hell, for he takes delight in hellish enjoyment. Again, this is this avaranatmika shakti. God is covered. Purport. So here's Indra becoming a hog. It is said that once Indra, the king of heaven, was cursed by his spiritual master Brihaspati on account of his misbehavior, and he became a hog on this planet. After many days, when Brahma wanted to recall him to his heavenly kingdom, Indra, in the form of a hog, forgot everything of his royal position in the heavenly kingdom, and he refused to go back. This is the spell of Maya. Even Indra forgets his heavenly standard of life and is satisfied with the standard of a hog's life. By the influence of Maya, the conditioned soul becomes so affectionate towards his particular type of body that if he is offered, quote, give up this body and immediately you will have a king's body, he will not agree. This attachment strongly affects all conditioned living entities. Lord Krishna is personally canvassing. Give up everything in this material world. Come to me and I shall give you protection, but we are not agreeable. We think, we are quite all right. Why should we surrender unto Krishna and go back to his kingdom? This is called illusion or maya. Everyone is satisfied with his standard of living, however abominable it may be. Of course, economic development says, don't be satisfied with your standard of living. So, struggle and struggle to improve the standard of living. But the contrast of having a spiritual body and being in the spiritual atmosphere and eternal loving service and relationships with Krishna and his devotees, that standard of happiness is not something even conceivable. Like, what does it mean even? What to speak of, what does it feel like? And so that's the sense of being contented with one's standard of living. Just the lulling, dulling potency, as Prabhupada said earlier here, that in the lower species of life, one doesn't even know if one is suffering or enjoying. Or one takes suffering to be enjoyment. And finally, text 6. Same theme. Such satisfaction with one's standard of living is due to deep-rooted attraction for body, wife, home, children, animals, wealth, and friends. In such association, the conditioned soul thinks himself quite perfect. And very short purport. This so-called perfection of human life is a concoction. Therefore, it is said that the materialist, however materially qualified he may be, is worthless because he is hovering on the mental plane, which will drag him again to the material existence of temporary life. That's the prakshepatmika shakti, pull down, cover. Pull down and cover. So becoming this point in this sentence is becoming highly qualified materialist, heavenly planets or in this world, super successful person by material standards. The platform of the mind, thinking now I've made it, or I'm great, I've achieved things that others could not achieve, I'm successful. This is, according to Bhagavad Gita, demoniac mentality. And again, the illusory energy pulls that person down to the material existence of temporary life. One who acts on the mental plane cannot get promotion to the spiritual. Such a person is always sure to glide down again to material life in the association of so-called society, friendship, and love. The conditioned soul appears completely satisfied. So that there's this dichotomy that who's satisfied. But so from the absolute standard, certainly not satisfied. And even from a relative standard, you know, just like a child, sometimes satisfied, sometimes not satisfied, sometimes satisfied, sometimes not satisfied. And that's not what satisfaction is. Gandharvika, shh. Sometimes satisfied, sometimes not satisfied. So it's a restless condition. And the standard of real happiness is very far away. Even the conception of happiness that's unending, happiness that's not interrupted, happiness that's ever increasing. Those are ideals of what everyone would like, but we're so far from it, just because of implication in material existence. Couple of things. Having a strong sense of reality about what material existence really is an impetus to not loiter in material existence. When discussing the whole message of this particular chapter, it's kind of like a scare tactic. This and the hellish planets at the end of the fifth canto, and the description of Kali Yuga at the end of Kali Yuga, it's really scary. It's not fiction. The scariness is that's the picture of reality. Kind of like, an anatomy class. Persons are attracted to the skin and look just underneath the literally thin covering of skin, and makes your stomach churn. But put a little veneer over what makes your stomach churn, and it looks attractive. So this section, this particular chapter, is scary. But it's reality. And so the reality of how Maya works, and specifically those who turn their attention away from Krishna because of being averse to Krishna, then they turn themselves away from the position of real happiness and eternal time and the real nature, and it's just a picture of reality that has, a purpose in going into it. Is it's a deterrent for persons who may feel in some moment of weakness to go for it. It's advice not to go for it, or an impetus for devotional service. And then another approach to this subject matter is, in part, it's an answer or a reply to the question that people ask so often: why is God, because he's all perfect and all powerful, he could create anything he wants, why does he create a place where there's misery and suffering? And there's different ways of saying that and different intentions behind saying that. Some say, therefore, there's no God. That's fiction. So many things. But the adverse fruitive activities chapter helps us get a true picture of why there's creation. It's not a position of happiness. There's no promise from Krishna that it's a position of happiness. In fact, Krishna is very clear about it. It's a position of misery. Don't go there. So if Krishna wants us to not go there, why does he provide it as an option? Because the living entities want it. And they want the kingdom of God without God. They want the position of being the enjoyer of Krishna's energy, although he's the enjoyer of Krishna's energy. That means they want Krishna's position. And he doesn't interfere with that. He facilitates by illusion. And the illusion, again, the theme of this chapter is, this illusion is to help us understand there isn't any real happiness there. So that's the message. So the person asking the question, why does God create things where people suffer? It's to help us, purpose is to help us understand there's not a position of happiness apart from Krishna. It's just a fact, just reality. And so if you want happiness apart from Krishna, then you get illusion, not reality. So in that sense, the misery of material existence isn't misery. It's illusion. And the happiness of material existence isn't happiness. It's illusion. So why does God create a situation where people suffer? Well, there's no suffering. It's insubstantial. Like a dream. There's no substance in the dream. So why then allow people to have dreams? Well, they want to dream. They want to dream that they're being happy. Or making arrangements to be happy. So, independent of Krishna, that's not possible. And so there's illusion. And that's what the chapter is about. Adverse fruit of activities. If the flip side, if one does not take to devotional service that has been amply described by Lord Kapila, then there's an option. You can be an illusion. So he's describing this to his mother. Any discussion?
Sometimes you hear that it's Krishna's mercy when you're put into a certain situation.
That's a devotee.
Yeah.
And then there's the non-devotee. And, you know, like the non-devotee example is like the state that creates a prison, and it's merciful to the law-abiding citizens that criminals are put in prison, and at least the intention is the house of correction. It gives the lawbreaker an opportunity to reform himself. It's like the profession that Premarnava has. Do you know what Premarnava's profession is? He teaches school at a reform school. His students are juvenile criminals. That's at least what I understand. And he is part of a team of people that are helping to reform them. So, you know, make them behavior-wise, but also skill-wise, equipped to return back into society and have a wholesome life. But obviously there's seeds, or there's propensities. There's seeds or propensities to do mischief. Or law-breaking things. So, the purpose of creation is to help reform. Mature velocity, just sit still. You know, just sit still. Just sit still. Thank you.
When we are put in this situation, sometimes it's like a situation where we can learn and move on.
Yeah.
Or just stop by that energy.
Yeah. 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 Good. The rebellious soul continuously gets pushed down. That's, you know, under the influence of Maya, that Prakshipatmika Shakti keeps them continually pushed down. And therefore, for a devotee, there must be humility, that is, there's something to be learned here, and that's what I want. I want to learn so that I can be reinstated in my position with Krishna. So the humility is in terms of relationship with Krishna. Not necessarily, you know, the situation is yummy, but my relationship with Krishna is wonderful, and there's something for me to understand about my relationship with Him, my regard for Him, in this circumstance that's difficult. And sometimes that's difficult to keep that regard for Krishna in the proper position. But that's bhakti. Anything else? Yeah.
Can you give some examples of loving somebody in relation to Krishna?
Well, sure.
Like a child, like that's easy.
Huh?
Sometimes. Like children. You know.
Okay. Well, my thoughts were filled with so many nice examples.
Please.
Well, you've read Mother Jamuna's book. I hear all about it because I haven't read it, but you know.
I've read some of it. Yeah.
So, there's an example, or Prabhupada in relation to his spiritual master. And, you know, the connection was Krishna. And because the connection was Krishna, the love of his spiritual master was unflinching. Or, you know, the Pandavas and Kunti. And Draupadi and, you know, so these illustrious personalities. It's really easy to think of pure devotees and their relationship with their spiritual master. Narada and, you know, Prahlad and Narada. Even it was in, you know, horrific situation. He wasn't feeling unprotected by Narada. He wanted Narada's association. Anyway. Whether it's, you know, the child to the parent or the parent to the child, using that example, the way to see in relation to Krishna is I, the mother or father, or I, the child, the dependent upon mother and father, in the spiritual conception, here is a spirit soul that Krishna has made some arrangement so I can be in my relationship with Krishna through serving this particular soul. And you know that depending upon what the position is, the mother or the father or the child, the relation is defined. But the essence of the relation is service to Krishna. And it's really easy to just get absorbed in what the relationship is and not be attentive to what the relationship with Krishna is. But Krishna consciousness is the spiritual conception is constantly alert and active while the external circumstances are ever changing. Parent and child is a good example to understand so many things about spiritual life, about Krishna consciousness. How to be attached, I mean, it's right in the verse, two verses, the affinity for attachment to those things. Is what's behind. Here's how Prabhupada writes it. The exact language of Prabhupada is not jumping off the page. But it what's behind He says it so nicely. What's behind the willingness to accept any position is the attachment to those circumstances, family, home. Oh, here it is, right in the verse, text 6. Such satisfaction with one's standard of living is due to deep-rooted attraction for body, wife, home, children, animals, wealth, and friends. Such satisfaction with one's standard of living is due to. So that's the mind. There's the I, and there's the mind. And because there's I and mind, even, you know, there's hardship and turmoil, I'm attached to it. And I just accept that it's just part of what goes along with all these wonderful things that I'm attached to. So for devotee, you know, hard lessons are to help us realign our affinity for Krishna, attachment for Krishna. Not attachment and detachment from the temporary. Same as the whole chapter. Anything else?
I have two questions. One is that in this last report, Prabhupada writes that one who acts in the mental plane cannot be emotionally spiritual.
It's a nice sentence, isn't it?
I was wondering, I feel like a lot of things that they do in devotional service are
from the mental platform.
Yeah. So, does that mean that as long as it's coming from the mental platform, I can fall down?
Well, there's some, let's put it this way, there's some submission to Krishna just by the fact that on the mental platform one is mental platform relating to Krishna, as opposed to mental aversion to Krishna. But the full benefit isn't present, and it's also very tenuous. You know, if the wind starts to blow in the other direction, one can step back. So it's not firm and fixed and steady. It's like the mind, it's very unsteady, chanchala. And depending upon the mind's makeup at a particular time, I'm just, you know, following his dictate. That's very dangerous. So it's mixed. So he's probably saying that one cannot approach the spiritual. It says, so it's mixed. It's still devotional service that's mixed. And the remedy is to bring the mind to Krishna, not just to, you know, to the, this is, I find this to be a position of happiness. And then when that condition of happiness that's based upon the circumstance that the mind says this is happiness, when the circumstance changes and the mind says, well, this isn't happiness anymore. And then you're vulnerable, whether it's happiness or not happiness, just, you know, being strongly influenced by the mind. We don't do this surgery and remove the mind. We purify the mind and direct the mind, but that requires intelligence and requires spiritual strength. So we associate with devotees and engaged in hearing and worshiping and clear out the imbalance of the mental influence and get more to the spiritual influence side. That's the, you know, the soul saying yes to Krishna, regardless of what the mind says. You have something? When we're doing devotional service in this material world,
do we still feel separation from Krishna?
We feel separation from Krishna. Well, most people feel separation from the material objects that they're hankering for. You know, this, on this deeper soul level, yes, there's feeling of separation from Krishna. Or, say the flip side, hankering to be firmly situated in interacting with Krishna, in our relationship with Krishna. That's spiritual. That's the spiritual potency acting within the material world. That's good. Well, get used to it. Meaning, those feelings exist in the spiritual world. And its impetus, it's spiritual feeling, its impetus to be with Krishna. It's good. So don't try to dismiss it. Nurture it. And then, so that it means one of the principles of nurturing is that, that feeling is you do the activities that put you in contact with Krishna. Like the gopis. Krishna left the gopis. What did they do? They went mad. And then they started enacting pastimes of Krishna and talking about Krishna, remembering Krishna, and you bring that resource of that which brings you in contact with Krishna to pacify the feeling of separation from Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. And then, you know, that feeling may change to, oh, now I'm again with Krishna. This is very nice. And then circumstances change or whatever, something changes. And again, there's that feeling of insufficiently connected with Krishna. So get used to it. It's good.
Regarding guru-disciple relationship? It's eternal.
It's eternal.
So in the spiritual world,
yeah, what it's going to look like, we don't know, but it's eternal. Well, it's eternal. The configuration is something that we don't have a clue about, but it's eternal. Somehow. What it's going to look like, we don't have a clue about, but it's eternal.
You get to know Krishna.
Huh?
You get to know Krishna through your guru in spiritual
world. Well, that's a... This it doesn't look the same as here. Meaning, you know, we don't perform Guru Puja and have an annual Vyasa Puja for somebody's birthday. You know, the form of it comes differently, but the process of continually being guided and moved closer and so forth in the circle of Krishna's associates. That's what the essence will be, and the shape and form of it will have to wait and see. Well, yes and no. no, in terms of... Here's Prabhupada spoke on many occasions feeling separation from his Guru Maharaj and then feeling no separation from his Guru Maharaj. And remembering the instructions that he was carrying in his heart was the sense of being connected. And then the sense of separation is the physical presence and all of those other things that go with proximity weren't available, so feeling separation. And remember, I heard the first one before I heard the second one, and it was very clear. I'm always feeling the presence of my spiritual master. I'm not feeling separation from my spiritual master. My spiritual master is always with me. That's what I heard over and over and over again. So I was like, got it. But then there are some occasions where Prabhupada would speak about feeling separation. He couldn't just go and physically report to Bhaktisiddhanta, this is what's happening in my carrying out of the instruction you gave me. But, you know, in some other, now come back to the initial question, Bhaktisiddhanta was continually guiding him. And, you know, the continually guiding him principle was Prabhupada's total dedication to the instruction. So the two go together. Dedication to instruction and feeling connected and continuing to receive guidance. So feeling separation, you know this wonderful story from Leelamrita when Prabhupada was with the devotees at 22nd Avenue for so long. They couldn't even imagine of life without Prabhupada at 22nd Avenue. But he had a world mission to perform. When he left, they were writing him up, we can't stand the separation. So then he told them, in that place where I sit, you can put my picture. And remember the instructions I've given, and that way you'll feel connected. Your feelings of separation will be pacified. Okay, I'm going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.